Perhaps it's you, perhaps it's not. Perhaps. Hi, everyone. Hello, this is Liz.
This is Samantha.
We are the makers of Perhaps It's You, an unofficial Unsolved Mysteries rewatch podcast brought to you by no one, because this podcast is not successful. That's when the sound effects kick in, but we don't like have a soundboard, so.
Yeah, exactly.
I live so much of my life literally just to amuse you. I just want you to know that. That's like my top priority.
I really appreciate it.
So this is so random, but at book club the other day, we were talking about how for a long time, I have not been able to donate blood because the U.S. had a restriction on people who had lived in the U.K. for more than 6 months in the 1980s. Really specific. But
you might have mad cow disease.
Yes, essentially the concern was that I had been exposed to mad cow disease. So for literally my entire life until I guess they overturned it like 2 years ago or something, and I recently found out about this. And so I was saying at book club, because we've talked a lot about mad cow disease, he's like, oh, everybody, I can donate blood now. And someone was trying to scare me and telling me that, no, we don't really know how long that can be dormant, even though we're talking about like 35 fucking years, everyone.
I don't
like
think
no,
so,
Liz, you could
I
still
think
have
you're out of the woods.
Literally, it's like the entire country. It's not like I was personally exposed to it or, you know, or anything. It's just like, right. I was in the vicinity. But anyway, I did tell this person, it's like, well, they're going to accept my blood now. My blood is going to be inside you. So then yesterday I'm driving and my phone connects to my car and I was like, text Samantha. And I was like, okay, message of text. And I was like, my blood is going to be inside you. That was it. That was all text. I found it so funny.
The best part is that I was on my phone doing, I don't know, doom scrolling probably. I don't remember. But I was on my phone. So I just saw the banner notification come down from you that just says, my blood will be inside
you. First of all, I just thought it was really funny to text that out of nowhere. But also I wanted to hear my like phone car robot voice go, okay, message, my blood is going to be inside you. Is that correct? And maybe like, yes.
Send.
Okay.
So funny.
I think our big update is about the flag.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have so much flag news. We don't record often enough to bring you like breaking flag news. So since the last time we talked, they had six finalists and we talked about how we really didn't like any of them. They narrowed them down to the three arguably worst ones.
Most boring, at least.
To be the final three. And then now we do, in fact, have a new state flag. We have a new state seal, too.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
I literally have a note on my phone because I've been keeping track of all the flag.
You have been really fucking up to date on this, on the flag debate. You've been,
I don't know why
impressed.
I'm so invested in this.
It's not something that happens regularly though. It's kind of interesting. It's not like you get a new state flag on a regular basis.
It's been fascinating to watch the whole process because like anything that's chosen by a government committee, it's been needlessly complicated.
Sure, yeah.
Very confusing. The rules keep changing. And this isn't even me just saying that as an outside observer. I've seen people who are like the actual designers of the finalist flag say that they are very confused and they're the ones like going through it. But it's fascinating. So the first thing they did was they picked our seal, which I think was, it seems like there was one front runner the entire time, the rising loon. I don't even know, they kind of all have nicknames. I don't know what the seal, the one with the loon on it was the
yeah I like
favorite.
It
I think feel, it's great.
I think they could have simplified it maybe just a little, but that's nitpicky. I think it's nice. It's a striking image. I'm glad we got a loon somewhere.
We got the loon that everybody wanted. The eye, the original design, the eye of the loon was not red, and they are changing it so it will be red in the official the official. Amazing. And I think that's honestly one of the best decisions that they made. My only critique of the seal is that the pine tree, I don't know that they're pine trees. There's a thing in the background that looks like a mountain. And you knew it was pine trees. I thought it was a mountain until I read that it was supposed to be pine trees.
I had seen the original design, which has different colors. And I think because it's a seal, it's going to basically just be like one like black outline or whatever. You know, like I don't think it's going to have multiple colors. But when I saw it in multiple colors, the trees were green and it made more sense. But when it is just the like drawing, it does look very mountain. They do look like mountains. I also, there's like grass or wheat or something. I would probably take that out.
It's wild rice.
Okay. All right. Fine.
I did not realize that's what a wild rice plant looks like, but
I feel like that's just a little too much going on maybe, but that's very nitpicky. That's like, we're doing critique at art school nitpicky. Otherwise I like it. I think it's cool. They should put it on everything.
I think it's great. They did change a few things about the seal. They removed the year of statehood, which
who cares?
Chuds on the internet are pissed about, but no one else. They removed the state motto and replaced. There was some talk about having no motto. So I'm not going to pronounce. I can't pronounce it in French, but our state motto was the Star of the North, and that used to be on the seal.
Why is that in French though?
I think that's because it was first settled by the French. I have no fucking idea, actually.
Like, that seems a little weird to me. This place is not that French.
There was talk about putting it in English, and then it was decided they would remove it entirely, and then there was some discussion about having no motto on it at all, but it was ultimately replaced by the original Dakota word for Minnesota, that is where Minnesota is derived from, and I hope I don't pronounce this wrong, but it's Minnesota Mohoke. And that is going to be on the seal.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense.
Motto. What I don't know, and I haven't really been able to find like a definitive answer on this, is that it's possible that the Star of the North is no longer our motto if it's not on the seal. I read something from someone on Twitter who said that there's no law that officially decrees our state motto. The only reason that was our state motto is because it was on our seal, and lawmakers could change that. They could like submit a bill to make an official state motto, but without it, if it's not on the seal, it's not our motto. So I don't know if it's like not our motto anymore, or if Minnesota Mohoke is now our motto. I don't really care. It's just, I thought that was kind of interesting.
I do think it's, maybe I'm wrong and I don't really know the history of it, but I think having a French phrase on it is kind of bizarre.
It's weird. It is weird. I don't quite understand why it was in French, but I love the seal. I think it's fantastic. I'm not sure I love the flag. It's growing on me. So the one they picked, you've probably seen it, is,
I'm not sure, like, everyone is so up on the Minnesota flag news as you, but maybe they've seen it.
You're right. I was thinking more of, like, whoever is still listening to the show is probably in our Facebook group and it's been posted. Sure. Mostly memes have been posted there, to be honest, but if you're in our Facebook group, you've seen it for sure. It is a blue, two shades of blue, and there's like a abstract Minnesota shape with an eight-pointed star, and then a field of blue on the right.
I wish the abstract Minnesota shape was less symmetrical, so that it looks more like the shape of Minnesota.
This was really divisive. Some people wanted it to be in the shape of Minnesota and not symmetrical. Some people hated that idea.
Because it looks like a K. It looks like a Kmart logo or something to me.
I agree. It kind of does. I liked asymmetrical personally. I thought it would like really set our flag apart, make it unique. The original design had three stripes instead of the solid field of blue on the right.
I'm kind of into the blue now. I'm fine that we moved away from the toothpaste stripe.
I was pissed about them removing the stripe until you pointed out that it looked like toothpaste, and now I'm fine with it being gone because it was green, white, and blue, and it was supposed to be snow, water. I think either agriculture or the environment was green. I'm fine with just the solid blue.
So now essentially we have like two state colors, which are two blues. We have this K type shape that's supposed to be the state and a star. And I think that's like a good thing to work with for like you know, designs or whatever. I already saw someone make like Minnesota shaped cookies that had the two colors of blue and a star on them. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cute. The thing is, it's anything is fucking better than the old racist one is the thing. And I've seen people, you know, look, I don't know who these people are. They're like sewer mutants that just type on the internet racist shit, but people like defend it like we didn't need to change it at all. It's like, first of all, you never fucking thought about that ever.
Also, even if you don't think it's racist, which I'm raising my eyebrows at that, even if you didn't think it was racist, it was an ugly ass flag.
Yeah, I was in favor of changing it before I had even ever really looked at it and realized, oh my god, this is appalling, which we all heard on the show, like, what? But it's just because it's a cluttered mess. You couldn't tell what was fucking was happening. And it turned out that what was happening
in MS Paint
was racist. It's just because they just put the seal on the thing. It's too, you can't even, whatever.
It was horrible.
I think if you are a sewer mutant and you are going on the internet saying, like, the old flag was fine, I hate progress, everything bad should stay the same forever, you should have to get that seal tattooed on your face if you like it so fucking much. You should have to walk around with that racist seal on your goddamn cheek so that we all know that that's what you think is good. So we can just all know to avoid you, basically. I think that should be, oh, you think that's, we should keep it? Keep it on your own fucking face then. That's my response.
Yeah, I agree completely. It was a bad flag. It was an ugly flag.
Terrible.
I guess vexologists all agree, or maybe not all of them, but I've seen some articles where vexologists have been quoted as saying that it's like an A+ flag. It's like it meets all the requirements. So that is good. I would say what I found a little bit weird and a little bit frustrating is like they accepted public input, or at least they said that they did, and it seemed like the finalists that got cut. So out of the top six, they cut the only design by an indigenous artist. They cut the flag that had won a ranked choice poll and seemed to have, from like what everybody could tell, the most public support. Those were the two that got cut and didn't make it to the final. And it was like, what are we doing? I think ultimately what we got was a good flag, but it was like, I'm not understanding this process at all.
It's fine. I think it'll grow on people. I've been talking to my brother about this because he knows a lot about flags for some reason. Who knows? But he was like, yeah, we'll see if anybody like even remembers in like a year. Like most places are not really thinking about their state flag, you know?
I mean, unless your flag becomes really iconic, like the Texas flag or the Colorado flag, like flags that are very iconic, I feel like do become sort of ubiquitous. I don't know. I mean, only time will tell if Minnesotans start to love this flag and fly it everywhere and wear it on clothes and shit. Or, you know, we might just join the ranks of states that have just like, you know, whatever. It flies on government buildings and no one thinks about it ever in their entire life.
Yeah, I think Illinois has like an eagle or something. I couldn't even tell you. I'm going to look it up right now. The Chicago flag is really good. I will say whoever designed the Chicago flag, which has two blue stripes, one for the river, one for and then it has stars that represent something. That's actually like a really solid flag. But let's see what
Minneapolis have a flag.
I don't know.
I don't really know many cities that have flags, or I don't know of their flags if they have one.
Yeah, Illinois is like an eagle on a rock, and it's holding the thing. Yeah, this is also just the seal on a flag. This sucks. Illinois, do better. But I will say that Minnesota as a state has way more state pride than no one has Illinois state pride. You either have like I live in Chicago pride, or you have I don't live in Chicago pride, and those are the only things.
Fair enough.
There's like the state as a whole is not like,
and that's probably one of the reasons why people had such strong feelings about our flag, is because we all want it to represent what we love about Minnesota. We want it to have a loon and water and snow and snowflakes, and you know, maybe you fish and you want that represented. Like, I feel like people do have a lot of pride about Minnesota and want it to represent all of that, which no flag possibly could.
Chicago's flag was adopted in 1917. The design was by Wallace Rice from City Council. It only had two stars for a while, and it got four stars later. What do the stars represent, though? The three sections of the white field, blah, blah, blah. I just feel like it's very, like, classic. It's catching, you know.
Oh, Minneapolis does have a flag, and it's ugly.
Okay, let me see. I'm tired of reading about the Chicago flag. Minneapolis flag. Oh, yeah, I looked this up. This looks like... Okay, this is going to sound mean.
It's just clip art.
This looks like it is the logo for a community college.
No, it really does.
It has, like, it literally, first of all, I'm seeing it on a pennant, but it's, like, a circle logo, so that's terrible. And then it has, like, four quadrants, and they each have a symbol in them.
The building symbolizing education and the arts, a cogged wheel and a square symbolizing labor and industry. I would never have guessed that. A pilot wheel symbolizing our lakes and rivers. A microscope symbolizing research, skilled craftsmanship, and progress.
Yeah,
Minneapolis
terrible.
Needs a new flag. Now listen, the laser loon is up for grabs.
Oh shit!
How about Minneapolis government get in touch with those laser loon designers and get that shit on a flag because you got a big opportunity.
I don't remember the artist's name. I'm sorry, but I posted a comic in the Facebook group that explains the origin of our new flag as if it was a laser loon that, like,
makes perfect sense to me.
The thing that's the state is actually the bird opening its mouth and the star is actually its beaming eye. And you know what? I'm going to see that for the rest of my fucking life when I look at that flag. I'm going to be thinking laser loon. So I'm glad to, at least to me, it is a laser loon flag. You know?
And to all of us. I still can't find a laser loon t-shirt. I don't understand what the fuck is up with that.
Okay, I feel sort of bad we were making fun of the Minneapolis flag because it was apparently designed by a high school student, but also maybe we shouldn't have a high school student design our, you know what I mean? Like, no offense. No offense to Louise Sundin, who designed it and was apparently given a $250 savings bond for her effort. That's so funny. Yeah, it's terrible. Sorry. Laser loon or just the picture of that guy's dog.
I mean, the thing about changing it from the stripe to the field of blue is that's perfect for Photoshop. I've already seen people Photoshop that dog on there, and it works great. So that's not, maybe they took that into consideration.
I've also
seen pride flags where they've replaced the field of blue.
That's nice. I like
so
that.
I think pride next year is going to be great because I'm sure you're going to see all kinds of flags with
it is. It colors. Is very adaptable. Like, it is things that you can work into other designs, you know, like I think it will, like the state fair craft ladies, they're gonna go nuts and they're gonna come up with some really good shit, I think, because now you have like the colors to work with, some like basic design, and then like,
oh, it's quiltable. I've already seen people online talking about quilting it, and I was for a second thinking about doing something like that for maybe the state fair next year, but I just know there's gonna be 50 flag entries because the star is literally like a quilted star.
You just have to make yours weirder. You have to make it, like, you have to, like, go somewhere that no one is going to go with it.
I can put the Teletubby sun on it. You remember that one?
Yeah. I was like, obviously you need some blue fabric with pornographic images printed on it.
Accept that. Those ladies are not.
You're right. Sorry. That's where my mind went immediately. So, sorry.
And I didn't even shut it down for any other reason than it's just not getting in.
Yeah, well, that's true. You're not wrong. You have to, like, somehow sneak it in, but then there'll be, like, a scandal. They'll have to remove it. That would be cool, though.
I'm sure there's going to be some state flag crop art. If you're a crop artist,
I feel like
it's a great opportunity.
Start sorting your grains of millet. It's time. God, this place is like a hilarious fantasy land. The wholesomeness. Okay.
So now that our flag has been chosen, you probably, I'm not saying for sure, but you probably won't hear any more about the flags from us. I don't have, you know, I might not have some ongoing news, but there is a possibility that the legislature, has to like formally adopt it. I feel like it's like a good given that they're going to, but we don't really have a split legislature here or whatever. So I'm sure it will, but there is a chance that it could, after all this, it could be rejected.
They go, no, laser loon. Laser loon or bust.
I mean, if I was a congressperson, I would.
This is why they'll
never.
On my
principles.
They will never let us get there. The second that we try, they're going to release our search histories. We'll never make it.
You're so right.
And I was like, it's for my Unsolved Mysteries podcast. And they're like, that's not a good excuse. You're out of the race. I hope you feel very ashamed. This really has nothing to do with anything. Can I just address a pet peeve as an update?
I mean, absolutely.
Because, okay, this is one of the most annoying things about me in a, I'm sure, very long list. But the song Hallelujah is not a Christmas song. And I just came from water aerobics.
It's about sex.
It is a sex song. Thank you. It is a sex song. And I just came from water aerobics where, look, it's a beautiful song. And all the old ladies love it. And but I had to hear like a workout remix of Hallelujah. Because I had to hear
in a pool with a bunch of old ladies.
Yes. And because it was all like Christmas soul cycle music, which is my personal hell. But one of them was Hallelujah. And I was literally just like looking around. Is there someone I can tell right now? This song is about fucking. This song is about Leonard Cohen, who was Jewish. I don't know if that matters, but it makes it like not a really not a Christmas song to me. This is him remembering fucking his ex and equating that to like a spiritual experience because it was so good. I just want to read a few lyrics from Hallelujah to point out.
While Liz is doing this, imagine you're in a pool
with a bunch of elderly women who are singing along. They don't know all the words, clearly, but they are singing along. Yeah, okay. So let's see here. Oh my God. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew her. She tied you to a kitchen chair. Okay, this is one part. As for me, all I ever learned from love is how to shoot somebody who outdrew ya. Wink, wink. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Okay, this is really. There was a time you let me know what's really going on below, but now you never show it to me, do ya? And remember when I moved in you, and the holy dove, she was okay. Just like
have a holly jolly Christmas.
Remember when I moved in you? Oh my God. Oh my God, it's not Christmas song.
Oh, jolly, have a holly,
jolly Christmas this year. And I'm going, get me out of here. With nothing on my tongue. But hallelujah. Okay. All right, then. With that out of the way.
A little Christmas PSA. Yes. Happy holidays, everybody.
Don't be like, you know what I should sit around and sing with my in-laws? Hallelujah. No, don't do that. We do have an episode of Unsolved Mysteries to talk about. Surprise, surprise.
All right, all right.
This is from season 8, episode 9.
We so are many mysteries in this one.
Slowly, we're chugging along. You can watch this for free on YouTube or like somewhere else. I don't know. I think I have the first one.
You do.
I think this was a wanted. I don't know. I didn't write it down. Anyway, a sheriff's deputy in South Carolina responds to a routine call and finds a getaway vehicle from a string of recent bank robberies. There are Polaroids left in the car, which I think is very funny, that show the robbers had an arsenal of weapons. That's just like leaving extra ass clues. Like, why do you need to photograph all your guns? And then leave that picture in the car. Too funny. Okay. There was also a rambling message left in a small notebook signed Tom Dixon. You know how you like write down what you're going to do and then you're like, my name is Liz Walker and I love Robin Banks. He vowed he would never be taken alive. So Tom Dixon had spent most of his adult life in prison. He was suspected of at least a dozen bank robberies. This was his MO. He's what referred to as a takeover robber, which means that he controls everything inside the bank. I don't know what the other types of robber are, but whatever. He would go with a partner. The partner would like hold someone at gunpoint and then he would like bark a bunch of orders and people would have to do what he said because they wouldn't want that person held at gunpoint to be hurt, right? So it's not their money. What do they care? They're just filling up bags, right? Okay, so after a string of 7 robberies, Tom Dixon went underground. He went to a remote cabin in North Carolina with his girlfriend. Someone narked on him. The authorities got a tip, and they went up to the cabin. They somehow knew he was a jogger, so they just, like, waited for him to go for his morning jog to arrest him so that he wouldn't be home with, like, all his weapons. So I guess that's kind of smart. They raided the cabin. They found several guns and 25 sticks of dynamite, which is just very old school and I think is, like, hilarious. It's like Wile E. Coyote. He just had, like, a box of fucking dynamite.
You know, who doesn't?
Yeah, I guess. Okay. So he spent about a decade behind bars after that arrest before being paroled in the December of 1994. According to Unsolved Mysteries, he, quote, picked up right where he left off. But this time he did robbery solo. I guess he didn't trust a partner anymore. But he would do it holding a police scanner. So he would go up to the counter with a gun and he would say, this is a robbery. But if you try anything, like, I'll know, right? Like, you can't hit a silent alarm or whatever. So because he would hear on the police scanner, right? We hear from a Sheriff Ronald, and I don't love the name that the universe gave to Sheriff Ronald's mustache, but I'm but a conduit, okay? And it's not like the universe is wrong, because the name of this mustache is, it's giving SS officer. And it is. Yeah. And it is.
You know what? The universe isn't wrong, and it's too bad for Ronald, but...
I mean, is it,
he
though?
Chose that style, so...
It's the combination of the mustache and the haircut, which is, like, a very military... I don't... It's just... it's a terrible vibe. Terrible
vibe.
You're
right. And mustaches are a tricky business. You gotta... You know, you walk a fine line.
Yeah. For white dudes, if you have a mustache, I mean, just, like, think on it. Pray on it, okay? If that was the right
choice. Maybe have
you.
A few people weigh in. You know how, like, graphic designers will do, like, the penis test or whatever, where they'll be like,
what?
Do you see a hidden... Does this look phallic? I don't know if they call it the penis test, but you have someone look at it.
Yes.
To make sure there's not, like, a hidden penis you didn't notice or whatever.
You don't go, wait a second, this just looks like a vagina. Like, if you think about it for 5 seconds, this is a vagina. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I was like,
you have to do that, but with your...
What?
You have to do that, but with your mustache.
We
it's
all know
not called the penis test. That's
we
not.
All know that graphic designers put out their designs and they're like, which one of these makes you hard? That's the one we're going with.
That's the other penis test.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know that we ever talk about Sheriff Ronald again. It doesn't really matter that he has bad style. But Tom Dixon got cocky. He had started taunting the FBI with advance notice of his robberies, which I feel like is something that only happens in movies. And apparently, like, this one case where we see a reenactment of him calling from the payphone being like, hey, there's this really cool bank robber named Tom Dixon, and I heard he's gonna rob a bank at this place. You should probably, like, check it out or whatever. Very funny. Also, okay, I saw that internet comment the other day. The youth aged me more than the progression of time. This was someone asking, like, I see payphones a lot in movies. Were those real? And if they were, why aren't they around anymore? Were those real? Okay, anyway, moving on. But... Tom Dixon is not entirely stupid. Often when he was calling in a tip, the information was wrong. So he was like, oh, you better watch out for that super cool bank robber. He's going to be in North Carolina, but really he would be in South Carolina. So they would be in, like, the wrong place. I don't know why they would just blindly believe him, but I guess you have to do something.
I guess.
His last known heist was September 11th, 1995. I'm not saying that Tom Dixon did 9/11. The FBI believes Dixon. Now, in retrospect, they're like, oh, actually, I bet Tom left that car full of Polaroids with all the evidence on purpose to taunt us. Which you're like, yeah, why would you just, like, photograph? It was, like, basically, like, photographs of him committing crimes and giving a thumbs up. Like, yeah, come and get me, fellas. Robert Stack called this a deliberate taunt from a criminal ego running wild.
Okay, Robert Stack. That's a little grandiose.
Calm down. Did they, like, rob your bank, Robert Stack? Your money's fine. I understand that if I was in a bank and it was being robbed, like, that's a very traumatic experience and I would not want to go through that. But compared to so many things that we talk about, it's just like, who cares? Everybody was fine. Like, this guy didn't kill anybody. He didn't hurt anybody. He did traumatize some people, but mostly he stole money that was insured. So I just can't really get that worked up about it. But the authorities call him a walking time bomb, which to me just sounded like they were laying the groundwork to kill someone that wasn't really that violent, but they didn't. A viewer tip led to Dixon's arrest. He pled guilty to 7 armed robberies in 4 states. He's now dead. So don't worry. If you work at a bank, he's not like coming to rob your bank. You're good.
I'm like Fumbles, who's right around the corner.
That is really one of the best cases. I'm not sure we appreciated it quite enough that there was a guy literally so clumsy at robbing banks that the authorities called him Fumbles. That is such a fucking read.
And he was on the run. They needed Unsolved Mysteries to help catch Fumbles.
But yeah, in a way, it's not even a read on that guy for being clumsy. It's like a read on the police. You can't even fucking catch Fumbles. What do we need the police for? This guy's literally tripping over the carpet and falling down. And he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like doing pratfalls. And the police were like, if only we could catch him. Too bad we don't know how to do anything except like show up hours late, write a report and leave.
We need the public to help.
Yeah, yeah. We don't really get... Well, I mean, the podcast boom is over, and I'm pretty sure our podcast has never been less popular, but we don't get those emails anymore that are like, quit being so political. The police are just doing their job. But I still feel like I'm responding to those people who haven't listened in years, and it's like, yeah, if they're so great, why couldn't they even catch Fumbles?
That is the response. I mean, really. Because you have no answer. All right, we have another one. It's an unexplained death. 33-year-old ship steward Nancy Manny was one of the few female members of the Seafarers Union that sailed around the world to places including Brazil, Greece, Iceland, but mostly the Philippines.
Sounds amazing.
Something about the Seafarers Union? I don't know. It's just like really romantic. Turns out it probably wasn't, but
yeah, it sounds terrible, but at first you're like, wow, I want to see all
how
places.
Cool the Seafarers Union. So it just sounds badass. So she often worked on freighters that ferried natural gas from Indonesia to Japan, and she was the ship's steward, which I have no idea what that means. Unsolved Mysteries didn't explain it, and I didn't Google it. On August 30th, 1993, a body was found floating in the Chesapeake Bay. The cause of death was drowning. Although it could not be determined if her death was a murder, suicide, or accident, her family and friends believe that she met with foul play. So Nancy's ex-boyfriend, Billy Mesmer, was questioned 2 days after her body was found. Listen, this guy. He seems like a nice guy, but deeply weird. He didn't do it. Okay, like spoiler alert, he didn't do it, but he comes off as one of the biggest weirdos I think we've seen on this show.
I do not want to think about how I would come across on the show. I mean, I just wouldn't do it, to be honest. But I'm sure he wanted like her killer to get caught, so he was like, "Oh, I better do it." You know what I mean?
If a dude is on TV and the first line he says is, "Look, I'm a poet."
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe him. The actor they got to play him.
No, I don't. I knew so
real
many.
Blow up.
I knew so many of this boy in my school days. He's a romantic. He's a little intense.
Little intense. He wrote dark, threatening poetry, is how Robert Stack describes it. To her as like love poems.
He wrote her like 200 love poems.
And most of them were about, like, hearing your screams and I kind of understand why the cops were like, maybe we should look into this guy. Here's the poem they read on Unsolved Mysteries. Excited breath escapes his lips while he... Oh, I'm sorry. I took a screenshot and it's written in the worst handwriting ever. While he waits without the light, no one will hear your screams as the predator brings to life. I don't even know. This is supposed to be a love poem. The predator begins to bite. I'm sorry. No one will ever hear your screams as the predator begins to bite. The title of the poem was Night Stalker.
What year is this happening?
I don't know. Was it before or after the Night Stalker killer?
Well, I was going to see when the movie The Predator came out.
Oh, this was 1993?
So I think the original one is from 87, so maybe they were in. I was like, well, this guy's just a big fan of the Predator.
I was thinking about Richard Ramirez.
No, I know. Yeah,
And I'm like, you don't title your love poem Night Stalker. Like, Jesus Christ. So, investigators felt that Billy was obsessed with Nancy, and even he on the show says he was obsessed with her, which yeah, you can't really deny it when you're writing hundreds of poems.
Yeah, okay. I absolutely, this guy should have been investigated just because he's the boyfriend, but also because, yeah, he's a bit of a freak. But that doesn't, being a freak, and no, he should not have written those poems and sent her them to her. That's terrifying. But it also doesn't make him a murderer. It just makes
maybe
him a
she
freak.
Liked it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Women on TikTok are into those dark romances that I do not understand, but are worse than this. So maybe she liked it.
Do you think that incels are extra mad that they can't get dates, but women, like, write to serial killers in prison and, like, send them nudes and stuff, and it's like, man.
Yeah, probably.
I'm, like, below the Night Stalker in terms of pulling chicks.
Yeah,
it has to bother them.
I'm sure it does.
And if it doesn't, there's something to think about.
Well, Billy claims that he loved her and that the poems were merely his way to show his emotions towards her. Which, what emotions, Billy?
The fact that he's a freak. He's an obsessive
freak.
I guess. That's
he wants to drink her blood, so much he loves her.
I guarantee this guy, not when this was filmed, but maybe like 2 years later, got really into vampire role-playing games.
Oh, probably.
He doesn't have the haircut for it in the segment, but his soul is like
his
that
soul
dude.
Yearns for blood.
He's that dude. Like, he thinks that this is like really deep. Oh, God, those guys are the worst. He thinks this is like no one really understands us on this level because I think like really dark thoughts. And you're like, that's actually messed up. Like, that's not good. Please stop sending me weird ass poetry.
Yeah, Billy, I needed to calm down.
Billy.
What?
Billy.
So he claims to have a strong alibi.
Okay. So they ruled out the boyfriend.
He had an alibi. Feeling that the investigation was going in the wrong direction, Billy told police to look into the members of the Seafarers Union and their union run training center. Harry Lundenberg School of Seamanship is what it was called. He felt that they may have been involved in her death. So she had
Samantha,
a boyfriend.
Could you please stop making jokes about School of Seamanship? It's very, it's like pretty immature, actually.
Listen, if you want to talk about the penis test at the School of Seamanship.
You know what? I don't, actually. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, we're immature.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm the one scolding you.
So she had an ex-boyfriend who was in the Seafarers Union who became a suspect because there were suspicions, as well as like just the union itself sort of became suspected because some of the members were involved in international drug trafficking, allegedly. Billy claimed that a few days before Nancy's death, she came to him upset. She said that I don't know if like she has two boyfriends or it's an open relationship. Enslaved Mysteries does not call the seafarer guy her ex-boyfriend. But she's going to Billy saying that her boyfriend, the seafarer guy, told her that he was going to make her job difficult. If she didn't quote listen to him. Or she didn't, I don't know what that means. She claimed that she was threatened by him and that he was going, so he threatened her and she said that if you do that, she would tell the truth about him, what he was doing, presumably that he was selling drugs.
Yeah.
Which
if he's like sailing around the world, you would think that he would have access to, you know, importing drugs or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that does sort of make sense. Billy believes that that the secret was related to her boyfriend's alleged drug trafficking within the Seafarers Union. Several other witnesses also later contacted the police claiming that her death was related to drug trafficking within the union.
See, my impression of Billy is that they're not really dating. He's just like smitten with her and sending her poetry and she's kind of like, oh, whatever.
Maybe that is
like,
true.
Like, I'll be at sea, so Like, I'm not ever around, so we're not really gonna date or hang out. See you never. That was kind of...
Oh! Sorry, I'm looking at the Unsolved Mysteries wiki. They described Billy as her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
That maybe they were still close. Maybe they were still close and still kind of friends.
I think he was
she had
just
moved on
not...
to dating someone in the Seafarers Union.
I don't think Billy was over her. I think she had moved on. And he's, like, still writing her poetry and, like, trying to get her back. And she's like, sort of like, well, it doesn't really matter because literally I'll be in, like, the Philippines. Like,
right,
I'm not going to see you.
Exactly.
Write all the creepy-ass poetry you want. Like, we're still not going to be together.
Sorry, I had to mute myself because this dog... I'm watching my mom's dog, which is, listeners, what you're hearing in the background, probably, because he and my dog have decided that where they need to play is directly underneath my chair. Despite the fact that they have an entire house.
Yeah, but you're not in the rest of the house.
Yeah, you're right.
Go somewhere else, please.
I'm begging you. Yeah, okay, so sorry about the confusion over who actually was the current boyfriend. It seems odd for ex-boyfriends to be sending hundreds of threatening love letters to their ex-girlfriends. Billy.
Really, okay. He needs to channel that energy into performance art or
something. I wonder what Billy
is. Gathering. Today. Yeah, Billy, if you're listening to this, get in touch. Let us know how you directed that energy, and I hope it's not still sending women creepy love poems.
I hope not. So after Nancy's death, her sister Linda received calls from her friends who claimed that Nancy was murdered and that her murder was related to the Seafarers Union. When Linda received her personal effects, she found that pictures of her and her boyfriend were missing and that her camera was damaged and missing film. There were also suspicions about her last assignment on the SS Mayaquez, I think is how they pronounced it. Excuse me. Which employed several union members. In June 1993, her friend received a letter from her saying that she was getting death threats from several of the people aboard the Mayaquez. And her, it was kind of heartbreaking hearing from her friend because her friend was like, now I would like have pushed her for more information about like who specifically is sending you death threats.
Okay, but also I know the friend feels bad and that's not her fault at all. But also, even if she had asked that, it doesn't mean she knows. Like,
yeah, no, I'm someone, sure she might not.
Someone could be like, I don't know, slipping a death threat under her door or something. It doesn't know it, and it's just like, I don't know, it's just a threat. It's not gonna be signed like Tom Dixon. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like
exactly.
She could very easily be like, I have no idea. I just know that like people are pissed at me.
Yeah. Yeah. So police began to suspect that the death of Elizabeth Greenberg, who was murdered in 1988, was related to whoever possibly killed Nancy. There were not only similar in appearance, the two women, but they also had similar ties to the Seafarers Union, and both were dumped in Chesapeake Bay. The authorities also believe that mysterious phone calls and threats made by the unidentified perpetrators may have had something to do with her death. Investigators have no concrete evidence that connects it to the Seafarers Union, the school, or drug trafficking, and that case remains unsolved. So this case is solved and it's kind of interesting. So on February 12th, 1997, 32-year-old John David O'Meara was arrested and charged with the murder of Nancy while serving time in a Polk County, Florida jail for an unrelated crime. He had no apparent ties to the school that Nancy was attending or the Seafarers Union. An informant told the Maryland National Resources Police that O'Meara told him that he had killed, quote, the one girl on Unsolved Mysteries. O'Meara later confessed.
I would be like, narrow it down. What are you talking about?
Yeah. O'Meara later confessed to being responsible for Nancy's death. He told police that he met her at a bar on the night she vanished. He claimed that he took her out on a boat and that she fell overboard accidentally and drowned. However, in his confession to the informant, he claimed that he had thrown her off the boat after she rejected his sexual advances. Disturbingly, he claimed that he then ran her over with the boat several times. He told a similar story to another informant. O'Meara later pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was later released. He died on March 5th, 2019, at the age of 55.
Well, look, I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good takeaway from this horrible story about why women are scared to say no, because sometimes you get thrown in a bay and hit with a boat.
Oh, yeah.
It's really depressing. Who's going to brag about killing that woman on Unsolved Mysteries? What a sicko.
Yeah, no kidding.
Do these poems pass the penis test is my real question.
I'm going to say no.
Okay, are you ready for my sign magnet segment?
Yes. Yes.
I cannot believe I have to talk about this, okay? Usually I love sign med. It's a time to get like a little bit wacky, but this is... I don't know. I don't know why this bugged me so much. It opens up with Robert Stack by this like big fake model of a brain, like something that would be in a museum. And this is what Robert Stack says, and it's pretty offensive. It has been said that the human brain is one of the last great frontiers. True. Fine. That's fine. Despite years of research, we only have a few hints about why some people become Einsteins and some people Forrest Gump.
Okay.
The source of genius remains secret, a true unsolved mystery. Something about the range of human intellect being from Einstein to Forrest Gump. Oh my god. Okay, anyway. So now we have to talk about the fact that there's just like this nerd. We have to talk about this smart little kid, which, I don't know. I feel like we all knew a kid that was this smart. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem that like...
He's just
astounding to me.
Yeah, I don't know that he's like, I don't know. They have some examples of why this kid is a prodigy, but yeah, I feel like he's just a little nerd.
You texted me earlier today asking if it was okay to call him a little dweeb, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but you certainly wouldn't be the first person to call him that. The whole time I was watching this segment, I just kept thinking about how, like, yes, I do think we have a lot to learn about the brain. And I think as we learn about, like, different brain structures, we'll learn more about how and why people are just good at different things. And that this is, like, the only type of thing that we value. But if we lived in a healthier society, we would be valuing all types of skills equally, right? Like, we would be valuing what sure. people are naturally good at and like, taking advantage of that for society to, like, benefit all of us. But instead, we're only impressed by, like, a kid who's smarter than his parents.
I mean, it's true. Like, why is this kid who's, like, I don't know, really into dinosaur bones more smart than the, like, I don't know, the farm kid who can, like, rewire a tractor
age
11? You know what I mean? Like, there's just, it's just different skills.
It should be a benefit to society that we're not all good at the same thing. Like, if everybody is good at putting on a roof, like, we only need so many roofs, right? Like, that's not, we need people who are good at different shit. We need people who can be brain surgeons. We need people who can fix cars. Like, that should
Liz,
be.
Why is this kid smart when his parents are so dumb?
They're not even dumb. They're just like normal.
It's the mystery of the mind.
Something that friend of the pod Arden pointed out to me that I have like really took to heart and have just decided is completely true, because I am, as you know, not a morning person. But she once was like, well, it makes sense that everyone naturally doesn't have the same circadian rhythm. Like, once upon a time, you wouldn't have wanted everyone in your community to be asleep at the same time. That would make you vulnerable.
Like, exactly.
You want people who are up at night. It's like, some people should naturally be morning risers and some people shouldn't. Like, that should be part, but that's not how we operate. Anyway, that just made me think about that.
I had to do, like, design a training once for work about sleep and mostly about, like, fatigue. It was like risks associated for fatigue, but as a part of that I had to do a little bit of research on sleep, and it's absolutely a myth that like all successful people are early risers, or like the most successful people only have to get like 3 hours of sleep. Like, that's not like true at all. Like, there's plenty of examples of highly successful people that like say, yeah, no, I need like at least 9 hours of sleep a night, or I sleep in it. Like, it's just like, there's just, yeah, you're right. There's just all kinds of different people, and it is not like society says that, like, oh, you know, you have to like, I guess work all the time. I mean, I think that's what is implied by that, is that you're supposed to be up at the crack of dawn and you're supposed to work till the sun goes down.
That's,
but
it's like a puritanical work ethic thing. And it's not even necessarily like you'll get more done. It's like, just the act of working is good, right? It's not about working smarter. It's like you should be toiling. And I don't really want to accept that as like what everyone should be doing all the time. It's just toiling. I saw the other day that Dakota Johnson, the actor, she sleeps 14 hours a day. It's her top priority, she said. And I was like, what a fucking hero. This is the sort of thing. I'm always jealous. I'm convinced Gordon Ramsay only needs like 4 hours of sleep a night because how else is he doing all that shit?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm always really jealous of people like that because whatever, I had fibromyalgia. I need a lot of sleep. I'm tired all the fucking time. So I was just like, oh, a fellow sloth like me.
Listen, she's
successful and she's sleeping 14 hours a day. Bless her.
When this podcast is highly successful and we all have all that pod cash, we can sleep as long as we want.
I'll sleep all fucking day. Oh, it's going to be beautiful. Particularly now when there's like no sunlight. Oh my God. All my body wants to do is just hibernate away. And it's rude that I'm not a bear. But anyway, let's talk more about this nerd. His name was Philip
Dweeb.
This was Philip Polly of Denver, Colorado. Robert Stack said he might look like the average 8-year-old boy, but Philip is literally 1 in 10 million. Philip.
Robert Stack, he looks like a nerd.
Which is fine. Like all kids I knew as a kid. But also I swear I knew kids that were this smart. And so I was like, why they were not Unsolved Mysteries? I don't understand. Okay. So, in fact, Philip is so smart, he's too smart for school. He had to be homeschooled for his mother because gifted programs couldn't keep up with him. We see a shot of his room, which is just like a nerdy kid's bedroom. Hilariously, I have the same dinosaur sheet that this kid has. I got it at like a thrift store to like sew something out of. I was like, oh, I literally own that. Okay.
This is a chicken and egg scenario. Like, is he this smart because he has like one-on-one extremely good homeschooling? Like, I've known homeschool kids that were like insanely like scary smart,
right?
And it was because whichever parent was homeschooling that was extremely dedicated and they got like one-on-one instruction and they were just excelling,
right?
Like, is that why he like knows
how good
the dinosaur in the museum is missing a bone? Like,
I do think he probably has some natural brain structure or predilection for that makes him good at school. Like some people I do think are like better predisposed to be good at school. People that don't have any attention deficit things are going to be better at school, right? Like he's probably good at school, but you're also right. He's getting like this one-on-one tailored curriculum just for him because he's such a smarty pants. How better at school would all of us have done if we could have had that? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Presumably his
Philip
family can afford to have his right. mom stay home work.
And
so he has already a leg up in life.
Right. I think it's both. Maybe it's more the circumstances even than like his brain. Okay, so at the time of the segment, he was studying algebra, geometry, the Middle Ages, specifically castle defenses, and cellular biology. And I was like,
he made a point to say specifically castle defenses.
But I was like, yeah, but every nerdy 8-year-old boy is interested in castle defenses. Every go find me an 8-year-old boy who's good at school but didn't have like a night phase.
I feel like my grown husband is interested in castle defenses.
he's also super interested in how bridges are made. Oh my goodness. Get him on the Unsolved Mysteries.
He did terrible at school, so it's not adding up.
This is so frustrating to me. I don't even have children. I don't have to care about this at all. I can be like, whatever. I don't care how schools work. But it's just frustrating to me. We should be valuing different types of skills anyway. So now we get to the part where it's like his mom is like, look, neither me nor my husband are that smart, so we don't know why our kid's so smart. That's like, I don't, okay. At 6 months, he started to talk, which is early. This I found wild. He did manage to remove the bolts from his crib at 6 months. I want to see, like, how much of the crib, though. Was it just, like, he loosened? Did he literally take them all out and, like, put them back in the IKEA box? Like, did they come
he was
in?
Probably just, like, fiddling with it. I feel like lots of parents have examples of their child escaping their crib in creative ways. Kids are just little crafty gremlins.
They have all the time in the world to think about shit like that. They're just lying there. Okay. I'm so not impressed. Sorry, Philip. There's also this example that in 9 months he was taken to do this experiment, I guess, to like see how smart he was. And he was asked to spank a doll 3 times and he refused. And the scientist or whoever thought he didn't understand what he was saying, but really he just didn't want to hit the doll. So he like came over, patted the doll 3 times and then like hugged the doll, like, don't hurt the doll. So like the kid understood that like you shouldn't hit children, and apparently the scientist didn't. I don't know if that really like proves the kid is so smart, so though.
My question was like, has he been spanked? Like, does he know it hurts? And then he therefore like, I feel like kids are capable of empathy.
Yeah, I guess it's just the fact that he's only 9 months old when he's expressing this is impressive. But I mean, it's the fucking 80s. He was definitely spanked. We learned that he could read by 8 months and that he asked for a violin for his 2nd birthday. Almost immediately, he started playing simple songs he composed himself. Do we hear him play the violin, you ask? No, we do not. So I guess he didn't stay that good at it. I don't know.
We see him holding the violin incorrectly as a young child. So I don't know, like, simple songs. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean he was just like... he composed it himself.
I think, I don't know if this was as true at the time. Like, definitely now everybody thinks their kid is a genius. And maybe that's for the best. Like, maybe every kid deserves that sort of, like, you know, like, level of care and attention and whatever. But I just am not convinced. I don't know.
I have kids, obviously, so I'm not like up here claiming to be an expert. But like, 2-year-olds get interested in things. Like, my nephew loves golf, and if you saw him swing a golf club, it looks he can like properly hold his body and like, you know. And that does that make him a little? Yeah, he's a golf prodigy.
He's a golf genius.
I mean, I feel like it's not for a 2-year-old to like a violin. Like, violin is not like the kid. 2-year-olds like things.
I think that lots of children do stuff that's like impressive, and they can sometimes do things very suddenly, like things they couldn't do yesterday, they can do today, right? Like, they're growing at this just amazing rate, and all of a sudden, or they're taking in so much information and they're processing so many new things, and they're like, so spontaneously creative because of that. And maybe if we just like in general showed them more attention, then we would be, you know, finding out all this amazing creative stuff. But in general, we're just sort of dismissing them as children. I don't know. Yeah, so now we hear this story that at age 4, he was very fond of the Denver Museum of Natural History, which I was like, okay.
Oh, that's weird. A kid likes a museum where they keep the dinosaur bones.
Yeah. But he did notice a mistake in a painted mural that had supposedly gone unnoticed for 30 years. It showed conquistadors wearing French-style helmets. And being a know-it-all, he, like, corrected them. I sort of think they probably knew and didn't care. Like, whoever...
Someone had to have known.
So whoever painted the mural is not a historian, right? Like, that person's an artist. So they, like, pulled from the wrong source material, whatever. And I'm sure it was just, like, up, and they were like, oh, wow, you know? Like, we're not paying him to do it again, so that's the mural now. Anyway, he also asked why a dinosaur on display was missing several vertebrae from its tail. And apparently Philip was the only person that had noticed that this full dinosaur skeleton, there wasn't, like, quite enough room. They had to build a new display for it, so they had shortened the tail by removing some of the vertebrae. And he was like, what gives? That's kind of impressive. I think that's kind of cool. Now we learn that he's, like, so worried about, like, the government and the state of the world that sometimes he has trouble sleeping and eating. I was like, okay, that's a bad start, kid. You're already, like, experiencing that level of anxiety and depression. I feel bad for you. Okay, but by this point, he's 8. This is a very... Okay. This is a quote from him at 8 years old. Makes me feel sad that America does not value education, and America is becoming more like the Roman Empire than the great nation it was. This is just like a conservative talking head at 8 years old. That's the opposite of a genius to me. I would be like, if I had a child and that child at 8 years old is spouting conservative rhetoric to me, I would throw myself in front of a bus. I don't know what I would do. This is my worst nightmare. Okay. So Philip expands on this a little bit. I'm going to say it makes no sense. He's just repeating shit that he's heard. And here, okay, so it's becoming more like the Roman Empire. Why is that, Philip? And here's a few reasons. Because, like, one is we're doing gladiators, like in our movies, and we're going to have a worse fate than the Roman Empire. I just know it.
What? I have questions for Philip's parents.
Okay, that's just your... Quit letting your kid watch the McLaughlin Group and everything will be fine. All right, so now Philip's been working on an archaeological dig. Yeah, they let this like 8-year-old come and help an archaeologist. And the scientist is like, yeah, it's like stimulating for him and whatever, but basically he's just playing in the dirt. And I was like, yeah, thank you. Okay, so they ask him what he wants to be when he grows up, and he says, a paleontologist, an archaeologist, a conservationist, and hopefully he'll be the commander to the missions to Mars, and the chief curator at the Denver Museum of History, and if all other jobs fail, I would really like to be a great composer in the line of Baroque. Baroque, classical, and musical ears in the music stage, and then Robert Stapp just interrupts and goes, and the list goes on! Robert Stack's like, let's not listen to this nerd anymore. Then they kind of throw in as a possibility for this mystery that his knowledge comes from other lifetimes.
Yes.
Because he once told his mom that he was up in heaven and he like chose her to be his mom because she was the right one. And I was like, that's just kind of the weird shit children say. Sorry. That's like not special at all. Like that's sweet, but it's not like proof he's like come through other lives. Kids say weird shit, way weirder than that. We're weirder than mom, I love you, I chose you from heaven.
Yeah, that's true.
Again, boo, not impressed. Okay, so then some woman just tells us that maybe it is from past life because quote, anything is possible. And I was like, no, that's why Bigfoot is a ghost. Shut up. Okay. But he is still
not,
just
okay, not anything is possible, lady.
Anything. Anything is possible. This kid could have been Napoleon. It's like, okay, great. But then we just see him using a swing. He's still just a kid, and we see him playing on a swing. And his mother wonders how he will put his skills to use, and that will be the real test of whether he's a genius or not. And then Robert Stack comes on and is like, get your kids tested. They could be the next Einstein. I was like, yes, all of them. I don't know.
Get your kids tested? What does that mean?
Like their IQ?
Yes, I would like the genius test, please. Like what?
Here's my son. Your
pediatrician's gonna be like, I'm so, what?
Based on what? You're like, can I get my kid genius tested? And they're like, why? Robert Stack told me to. It's like, has your kid done any genius shit? Or are they just a kid? Maybe you should just also like let them be a kid. I don't know that this kid needed to, like, go to college at 10 or whatever. Like, maybe just let him be a kid and have a normal life. That's my thought. Oh, okay, here's what I wrote. There is an update. Guess what? Oh. It's unsolved. At the age of 11, Philip completed a 3-year internship at the Denver Museum of Natural History.
What? At 11?
Yeah. Why didn't they let me do that? Okay, at age 19, he became the youngest person ever to attend the Federal Law Enforcement Training Academy. So this kid's a fucking narc.
This kid's a cop?
This kid's a fucking narc. He studied...
ACAB includes Philip.
ACAB includes children that say things like, America is becoming more like the Roman Empire than the great nation it was. And absolutely includes that kid. Okay. He studied theology. I can't even talk. Compared to Philip, I am the Forrest Gump. Okay. He studied theology and philosophy at Oxford. He holds a master's degree in social policy and philosophy from George Washington University and a bachelor's degree from the University of Denver. At the time that Unsolved Mysteries Wiki wrote their update, it said that he is a policy and practices director at Respect and Ability, a national nonprofit organization fighting stigmas and advancing opportunities for people with disabilities. I looked him up on LinkedIn. It looks like he does like IT now. So I don't think that that's true anymore.
Okay. Philip, I'm sorry I called you a dweeb, but.
He worked with lawmakers to impact federal policy and improve opportunities for individuals throughout the nation. Today he is married with a rescue cat.
Okay.
his wife holds a doctorate. Why does that matter? Well, it can't just be with some dumbass like us, I guess. Philip, if you're listening, please write in. Please tell us all the ways we were wrong. Please tell us how smart you... I don't even know. Write into... Let us know what your homeschooling was like. Do you wish you had just had a normal childhood and you had just, like, played video games and eaten Doritos and shit?
Do you still want to be the captain of the Mars expedition?
Yeah. How do you feel about Elon Musk, Philip?
I don't want to know the answer to that question.
I do want to know.
Maybe we already know.
I think we kind of already do, but I want it in writing. Philip... is perhaps it's you podcast@gmail.com. Write in and be like, how dare you point out I was a nerd as a child, even though I had an internship at a museum before I was in double digits. Oh my God. Okay. That's it though.
Well, some mysteries will remain unsolved forever.
Yeah. Why am I so dumb? That's the real mystery.
All right. We have another mystery. This is a lost love situation. When Michelle Neal Arkin was 16, she applied, imagine this happening to you. Oh my God. So she applied for a part-time job, but was turned down because her birth certificate was not legal. Her mom had like driven her to
part-time job is making you bring in your birth certificate is my question. I have no idea what a birth certificate is.
Well, I guess you're right. Maybe not a birth certificate. Maybe she just brought it as part of the ID she needed. I have no idea, but she needed a birth certificate for this job. And which was like, I think at a mall or something. I don't know. So her mom had...
weird. She's going to like get a job at Claire's or something. And they're like, I'm sorry, this is not a legal birth certificate. I was like, first of all, who is hiring you that even fucking knows that? What? Maybe why is like, why is the security? Maybe. Yeah. Maybe she
didn't drive. Because her mom did. Her mom did drive her. She was only 16 at this point. So, and her mom had driven her to the job interview. She got in the car and we see her in the reenactment being like, they told me that there was stuff on my birth certificate that's not legit. And her mom was like, oh, well, that's too bad. I'm sure you'll get a job somewhere else.
Yeah, you'll get a job with people that are like a little more relaxed. But, okay, mom, this is the time to fess up. When it is like starting, I understand that you didn't always want to tell the daughter the whole story, which you're about to get into. But at some point when it's starting to like affect her life and she's already fucking 16 years old, that's when you fess up.
She needs a real birth certificate. Like maybe not for like every job, but like she's going to need it.
Yeah. Maybe she doesn't fucking have a social security card. Like
she might not if she doesn't have a legit birth certificate.
Right. I didn't think about that. So... This would be the time to tell her. I don't know why they drag it out for a while is my point.
I don't know. Because the truth is, Michelle's not her biological daughter. So in September 1965, Laverne and her husband Wilburn, Laverne and Wilburn, it's this beautiful couple.
Beautiful.
Had been married for 4 years. They wanted to have children. They had not been successful in getting pregnant, so friends of theirs, who were named Raleigh and Juanita Gord, contacted them about a baby available for adoption. She was the daughter of Patricia Bonner, a friend of theirs who was unable to care for her. She entrusted the Gords with the care, the temporary care, of Patricia, and with the understanding that they would find her a home. The Neals took her home and they named her Michelle. 2 weeks later, Patricia was the mom. So Patricia had entrusted the Gords with baby, with her baby, Michelle. And then they like basically like took her as like on a trial run. 2 weeks later, Patricia called and asked if she could see the baby. They learned that she had been widowed while pregnant with Michelle. She also already had 3 other children to raise with little money to support them. So she felt that giving Michelle away was the best possible outcome for Michelle. Which is just like such an impossible situation. How horrible.
Yeah.
I feel so bad. 2 weeks after visiting Patricia, the Neals returned to have her sign adoption papers. However, when they arrived at her apartment, she and her 3 children were gone without leaving a forwarding address. The absence of a formal adoption and with all the paperwork that went along with it did not affect Michelle's childhood. When she was 5, the Neals had a son, Stephen, who is their biological child. And at that point, they decided to keep Michelle's adoption hidden from her to not let her feel left out from the family. Mm-hmm. When she began school, a friend of theirs helped create a fake birth certificate, naming them as her biological parents.
I want to know more about this person that was like, oh, you need a birth certificate? I can whip that up.
Apparently, it wasn't very convincing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it worked for maybe a while, but maybe not. Maybe no one had really looked at it until this job situation.
Probably. Or like, I don't know, maybe they tried to run a background check and she like didn't come up in the system.
I have a friend with like a really large family outside of Chicago, and she's always talking about how like people from the older generation in her family always, this is a very Chicago thing, they know a guy, and that one of those things was like, oh, you need a fake birth certificate? Like, I know a guy. But I want to know how that guy got into that, though. Like, I want to know how that is his thing, or like this friend at school is like, oh, you need some forged documents, like I'll help you out. Like, how did that come about?
It's just so funny because, and obviously we get like a 3-minute segment to get to know these people, so I don't really know, but right. I get the sense that these are like very like straight and narrow, buttoned up people, and I'm just picturing them in like a back alley getting a fake birth certificate for this daughter they illegally adopted.
Oh, look, they knew a guy. There was someone at the school that was like, oh, you're going to take in this baby. It's a little bit complicated, but you're doing the right thing. So we just need a typewriter and some whiteout.
And bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
Birth certificate.
Yeah.
So by the time Michelle entered high school, she started to become more suspicious of her past. She actually often asked her parents if she was adopted, but they always denied it.
Okay, see, I have an issue with this. I get that they didn't always want her to know, but at some point,
tell her the truth. She's learning. She, like, she's going to have to find out eventually. She's going to be pissed. You lied to her whole life. Even when she asked you to your face.
She knows. Like, on some level, deep down.
I mean, maybe she must. She's asking straight up. Am I adopted?
Yeah. Why is she asking that? Like, is it that she doesn't really look like, she's like, how come no one in this family has my eye color or something? Like, there's something. She knows. So at some point, decide she's mature enough and just fucking sit down and tell her. Because, at this point, you're just constantly lying to her. You're making it worse. You are.
So finally, when she was 16, the Neils decided to tell Michelle that she was indeed adopted. She was furious because they had lied to her for her entire life.
I don't know. Obviously, the situation hurts. I can't imagine what it is like to process that news. But they've, like, aggravated it.
Yes! She was so mad, in fact, that she moved out and got an apartment with her friends.
With her friend that her parents hated, which I thought was very funny. Which is also just, like, a very 16-year-old thing to do. It's like, not only am I moving out, but I'm going to be living with that bitch, Marcy. And her parents are like, no! Anything but that!
Well, our recording got interrupted by fucking StreamYard. Can't get this act together. But I think where I left off was that...
she was moving out.
So she had moved out. She kind of came around, decided to forgive her parents. She returned to them. She later in life married and is now a mother herself. With her adoptive parents' blessing, she has begun to search for her mother, Patricia, and her 3 other siblings. This is solved. So Michelle's half-sister, Sandra, watched the broadcast and called the telecenter. And during their conversation, they planned a reunion. Michelle was happy to learn that her mother, Patricia Bonner Perez, was still alive. She was well, and she was living in Chicago, just 10 miles from her. She also learned that in addition to her 2 sisters and brother, she had 2 half-brothers and a half-sister. The next weekend at a Chicago hotel, Michelle, her husband, and their children were reunited with Patricia, along with all of her siblings, as well as her half-siblings and several other relatives. The Neils were also present, happy to finally see Michelle meet her birth family. So
that's nice.
We do get some footage of the reunion, and there's hugs. It's so cute. It's like the sweetest thing. So I'm glad. Unfortunately, Patricia passed away in 2008, but I'm glad that her and her daughter were reunited. Her adoptive parents maybe didn't make all the right choices, but I'm glad it worked out in the end.
All of these situations that we end up talking about, it's always out of like fucking desperation. I suppose that's obvious, but you wouldn't necessarily think that as a child. I think you think it has something to do with you, but it's always like...
Yeah.
It's always just hardship, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure later in life, Michelle came to accept that. But, as a 17-year-old...
It's disturbing. It's maybe not disturbing, also,
her,
but
adoptive parents should have told her.
Yeah, that didn't help.
They should have at least said, they should have at least not lied to her when she asked directly.
Am I adopted? Look me in the eye. Am I adopted?
I've never been in this situation. No! So whether or not they should have told her all along, it's not for me to say. But don't lie to your child's face.
It's easy for us to sit here, but that's also podcasting. That's literally what we do. You're literally just listening to us bullshit about stuff. Okay, we have one last case. This is a very sad case. I hate talking about this one. I think this was an unsolved death. Anyway, so we start off in Seattle, Washington in 1991, and Robert Stack talks about what a hot music scene it is. I'm sure he loves it. I'm sure he was at all of Nirvana's early shows. But we're actually talking about Mia Zapata, who was a singer in the punk rock group The Gits, who died at the age of 27. She was the band's lead singer. She wrote a lot of their songs. We see footage of the band performing. They were like up and coming, and it was like just sort of at the part where people are like, oh, they're going to make it big, right? So we hear from The Gits bassist Matt Dresner, and he recalled that that people would like come to their shows, like that he knew, and they basically didn't even notice him because she was like so charismatic and like such a good stage performer that they were like, oh, you were there too? Anyway. The Gits guitarist Andy Kressler talks about how she was someone to say. She was very compassionate and big-hearted, and that she brought that to the band, and she was like good at connecting people and, you know, beloved. Unfortunately, July 7th, 1993, Robert Stack tells us the good times were abruptly snuffed out because at around 2 a.m., Mia left a friend's apartment, and about an hour later, her body was found 2 miles away, reportedly laying up in almost a Christ-like pose. They make a lot of that, but I don't think it actually means anything. Basically, that she had been killed somewhere else and moved, and her body was like laying on her back with her arms out. I think it just kind of ended up that way, but whatever. She had been raped, beaten, and strangled. The killer had used the drawstrings of her band t-shirt to strangle her, which just seems extra cruel for some reason. Her death sent shockwaves through the tight-knit music community in Seattle at that time because she was considered this very, like, promising up-and-coming person. And so people were wondering, like, is this an obsessed fan? Is this, like, someone who's jealous of her success? Or is this just, like, a total stranger freak accident? Unsolved Mysteries wants you to think it's an eerie occurrence that she had alluded to a violent death in one of the last songs she was recorded. I don't think that's really that unusual for grunge music, but whatever. She grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. She was the daughter of two television executives. You know, she was artsy. She went to the college in Ohio, which is where she met the other members of her band, and in 1989 had moved to Seattle. They had been together as a band for 5 years, and they were just starting to get interest from major record companies. They were about to start their like first full US tour. It was just like finally like everything's coming together, you know, and then unfortunately she was brutally murdered. So it was around 10 p.m. the night of July 6th when Mia went to meet one of her friends at one of her favorite bars. She was not in town for a long time because they were about to leave on tour. When she left the bar around midnight, she walked a block east up Pike Street to a local rehearsal studio in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood. She had planned to visit her ex-boyfriend, but he wasn't home. So instead, she visited a friend who lived in the apartment 3 floors up in that same building. And then she left there around 2, telling her friend that she planned to catch a cab and go home. So it's believed that she went out the front entrance of that building and hailed a cab. So Mia didn't have a driver's license, and she took cabs a lot and apparently knew a lot of the drivers. So that was actually one of the first scenarios that the police looked into, was they started investigating cab drivers to see if anyone had picked her up, if anyone had seen anything, and if possibly a cab driver was the murderer. We hear from her friend that she didn't have difficulty expressing her opinions, and sometimes this got her into trouble. I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
obviously I don't, that upsetting to me. I guess the theory of bringing that up is that, like, maybe she got into a cab and she got into an argument with a cab driver and he ended up murdering her. But it's like,
There's what? Why would we even think like?
It's kind of victim blaming.
Like it's her fault.
Yeah,
because she has opinions.
So the thing is,
we don't even know if that's what happened.
He had a real mouth on her, so yeah, I don't know. Maybe she was frequently getting into fights with people, but
so say that. Not that she just had opinions and she
didn't
keep them to herself.
I'm just picturing that I've been brutally murdered and you're on Unsolved Mysteries being like, I once saw Liz get into a fight with random strangers on Michigan Avenue because they were anti-abortion protesters, so... Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's unconnected to my death, I assume. We'll see in the end. So sad, and I hate it. Okay, anyway, so they investigate cab drivers, but nobody reported picking up Mia that night. So, you know, it used to be for cabs, like, they had to track all their fares, and that would be, like, with their company, so the police could, like, go and check, like, oh, like, was anyone picked up from, like, around this apartment building, but there was no reports of anything like that. So at the same time, which, you know, is around 2, that is when the bars in the area would close, and some of her friends were also out hailing cabs at that time, but nobody saw her. Okay, so the other scenario is maybe she walked in the opposite direction. A friend had asked her to spend the night and who lived about 5 blocks away. So maybe instead of hailing a cab, she had gone down 11th Street past the Revoir and something had occurred there. I don't know. Unsolved Mysteries does talk to about a guy who heard a terrifying scream by the reservoir that night, and he was so disturbed by it that he rushed to the window to see, but he couldn't see anything. So there's speculation that that was Mia, but it's also just a random scream in the night. Who knows? Okay, there's also, what if she went, okay, so then I don't really understand what they're saying with this third scenario, but basically maybe she didn't leave that building because they found her demo tape and her personal microphone, which apparently she carried with her at all times. So maybe she went back to the studio and she was attacked there. I don't know. She could have left it there earlier. I don't really see how that proves anything. They don't know what time. I don't know. That didn't, maybe I'm missing something, but I didn't really see why that was like a whole third scenario. But anyway, at 3:20 a.m., Mia's body was found in an alley in the 100 block of 24th Avenue South in Seattle's central area. This is less than 2 miles from the studio and about 3 miles from where that guy heard screaming. There was very little forensic evidence. Part of the problem is that the body had been moved, so they didn't actually know where the murder had taken place, and there wasn't that much evidence, or they didn't really find any evidence on the body to go from there. So without a crime scene or witnesses, leads quickly faded, Robert Stack tells us. However, people were very worked up about this case. People were, you know, it just like made an impression. Lots of people knew Mia. People were following her career, whatever. The remaining members of the band decided to actually hire a private investigator to investigate it because they didn't think the police were doing enough. So they staged a benefit concert. This was actually, sounds like a really big deal, because that was one of Nirvana's like last performances, was at this benefit concert, and Joan Jett also appeared, and I thought it was really cool that Joan Jett took the time to come talk to fucking Unsolved Mysteries about this. Like,
yeah, I agree.
You know, she's very busy, I assume, but clearly she like felt a connection. I don't even know if she like knew Mia personally, but she like felt this connection to her and that this could have been her, or like she was really rooting for her to succeed. I don't know, but clearly like it meant something to her, and I think it's pretty cool that she like not only took the time to be in this benefit performance for the private investigator, but she also took the time to talk to Unsolved Mysteries. We saw that before when Billy Idol did that charity performance for that biker guy. We talked about that seasons ago. Mm-hmm. But we did not get Billy Idol talking to Unsolved Mysteries. Anyway, so Joan Jett was just trying to raise interest in the case, and she thought that that could help it get solved. At that point of the segment, the police were thinking that it was a random murder. There was nothing to lead them to believe it was the crazed fan or the jealous person or whatever. We hear from friends saying that she thinks it's someone that knew her because her face was untouched and blah, blah. It's just like, this is exactly the sort of thing we do on this podcast. It's just like, you're overthinking it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know that it's like, oh, there's probably two people in order to transport the body. And like, it turns out none of that's true. So whatever. Right. And yeah, people are just saying like, oh, they want to remember her when she was like happy and had all this shit. I want to cry. This is like fucking terrible.
It's really sad.
The members of her band went on to form a new band called the Dancing French Liberals of 48. However, they were just like, look, it's not the same. Her ex-boyfriend Robert was investigated as a possible suspect because their breakup hadn't gone well. However, he was cooperative with police. He was out with another woman that night. His alibi was confirmed and he was ruled out. So this first aired in 96. It was profiled on America's Most Wanted. I think there's a 48 hours. I know there's a Forensic Files if you're interested in this case that has more information about the evidence they found and blah, blah, blah. But it has been solved. So this was solved in 2001 because they had a swab of saliva taken from a bite mark on Mia's body. As a result, a male DNA profile was extracted from the saliva that was placed into CODIS. For a while, there was no matches, but in 2002, almost 10 years after the murder, the DNA profile was matched to a 48-year-old fisherman, Jose Mezquia. The match was made after his DNA had been uploaded into CODIS following a felony conviction for possession of burglary tools, which I feel like is a fucking bullshit conviction. But anyway, it did lead to catching her murderer. He was arrested at his home in Marathon, Florida, and charged with Mia's murder. He had previous arrests and convictions for sexual assault, kidnapping, indecent exposure, battery, assault, robbery. Ugh. He had a long history of physical abuse towards women, including his wife. There's no reason to believe that he knew her. It seems like, you know, this is just a total freak, wrong place, wrong time type of case. We hear about some like attempted kidnappings against another person. He's just fucking terrible. He denied killing her, but also like couldn't explain how his DNA was on the body. I don't want to read some of the details about this. He went on trial. He was sentenced to 37 years in prison. There was some point where his conviction was overturned, but in 2005, his conviction was upheld, but his sentence was overturned. But by 2009, he asked the judge to reinstate his original sentence. The request was granted.
Okay.
On January 21st, 2021, he died in prison at the age of 66. So an unexpected ending there.
Interesting.
So it seems like he was very guilty if he asked for his own sentence to be reinstated.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what happened there. Maybe the Forensic Files is more about that. I don't remember. Because, honestly, I really hate talking about that one. Okay. So that is that. Let's rate it.
Okay. Mysteriousness.
I mean, why are kids nerds? The biggest mystery. Why aren't all kids jocks? The biggest mystery of all. I'm gonna say, I guess we don't.
I mean, they're all solved, actually. I think every one of these, other than the mystery of the mind, has all been solved. So it doesn't feel that mysterious, but
your seafarer one was more mysterious, but it's like
sideways.
Yeah, I agree.
Reenactments,
fine. Okay, yeah, sideways, nothing too special, I feel like.
I feel like the same goes for fashion.
I would even say a down. Nothing stood out to me at all.
No, not at all. And Robert Stack?
I'm going to give him a thumbs up for standing by brains and being highly offensive.
Okay.
Or should that be
our podcast, we can rate it however we want.
No, maybe he should get a thumbs down for being like, you're either an Einstein or a Forrest Gump.
It felt a little Jonathan Frakes the way he was like standing by.
See, that's the thing. I did like visually, it's somehow like very cute and funny to me that he's like, did you know this is what a brain looks like? I'm so smart. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who cares? Sideways.
And then as far as writing this one, we're getting so many mysteries in the season.
There's a lot of mysteries in there. I don't know that a kid being a nerd is really a mystery, but goddamn, let's hope they solve it. Science, please. cure intelligence. Cure nerdism. And creepy guys that write too many poems.
Oh, that was weird.
Okay, that should have been the mystery. What makes guys do that? That should have been.
We'll never know that.
that's a true mystery.
I feel like I'm not going to remember this episode. Maybe the nerd segment. I don't know. But like the like guy who robbed a bank. I don't really care.
I don't care. The Bia one is interesting, but it's so fucking sad to me.
Yeah.
Partly because we have all this footage of like her performing and like.
Right.
She really was, you know, I don't know. Maybe people are overstating that she was like about to make it big. Maybe she wouldn't have. It kind of doesn't really matter. She was like at this really good point of her life. And she was so young. She was, I think, fucking 27. And then that snuffed out for no fucking reason. It's really frustrating. I'm glad that, like, you know, Kurt Cobain and Joan Jett and whatever cared. But it's just, like, it's just, that's grim. It's fucking grim. Yeah, I think it's a three. I don't know.
I think it's a good three.
It's just, like, I don't want to watch it again. Right? You're not going to sit down and go be like, maybe you'll put the nerd segment on. But I'm going to show it to Mac and go, this is you. I was talking to my nephew at Thanksgiving who like loves Star Wars, and Mac loves Star Wars. He would like me to emphasize as a child, not like today. But and I said something about him being a nerd, and he was like, you know, that means you married a nerd. And I was like, you think I don't know that? You think I'm unaware that I married a nerd? Oh my god, what?
No! You're telling me?
No! Take it back! I like run out, rip up my marriage license. This marriage is over. I thought I was marrying a really cool kid. Oh my god. Look, you got places to be.
Yeah, I do have dogs that are pawing at me to go for a walk. Also, we've been recording for 2 hours.
Oh my god. How is that possible?
It's because we have so many mysteries to talk about. We used to get like 3, maybe 4 on a good day.
These were 5 like long ones.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Unsolved Mysteries. This is too much work. Okay, my recommendation is do not start an Unsolved Mysteries podcast. I think I've recommended that before, but it's a solid one. And also, remember when we recommended potatoes? Another great recommendation.
You know, I'm just going to reiterate that recommendation.
Also, recommendation update, Warrior got canceled. So if you didn't start watching Warrior because I told you to, I'm mad at you because now that show's canceled. So maybe you don't deserve my found loves, okay?
Our found love is the new flag.
Yeah, really. My found love is a laser loon coming right for you. And the fact that my blood is going to be inside you all. All right, that's it, everybody. Give us 5 stars. Sign up for our Patreon. Give us
Follow
5 stars
us on
again.
The Instagrams and all the things.
We still have a Facebook group. You should come share memes there.
Give us a dollar, listen to us on Patreon. Listen to me be a know-it-all all about plane crashes this month.
Yes. Samantha knows so much about plane crashes, everybody.
I feel like I'm very annoying. I haven't even edited that episode yet, but it'll be out by the end of the month.
You're like, I don't really want to. But yeah, we're talking about the 90s special hosted by Gillian Anderson called When Planes Go Down.
AKA Why You Should Be Afraid of Flying. So if you are flying somewhere for the holidays, maybe wait to listen to our Patreon episode till you get home.
Okay, if you listen to that special on a motherfucking plane, write in. I want to know what's wrong with you. If you do that, we'll send you some sort of prize. Perhaps it's you, podcast@gmail.com. If you listen to our, I think it's When Planes... Is it maybe Why Planes Go Down or When Planes Go Down?
No, I think it's Why Planes Go Down.
Why Planes Go Down. If you listen to that on a motherfucking plane, write in, you weirdo. That's my found love. All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Keep Happy holidays.